I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to do our movie show. We're going to talk about the career and legacy of the late Robin Williams, and we will discuss the best and the worst the film world has shown us this year. My guests will be two old No Limits friends, WFYI's film critic Matt Sosi and Nuvo's movie man Ed Johnson Ott. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. Today is our movie show. If you would like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are two old friends of the program, WFYI's own Matthew Sosi, the host of Film Sociology, and our colleague from Nuvo, good friend, supporter of the program, Ed Johnson Ott. Both of you, welcome back to the program.
Good to be here, John.
Thanks, John.
I think you guys are getting close to being the, you know, like the Saturday night guys who get to phone it in from, you know, wear the red velvet jacket.
We try not to phone
it in. Yeah, but you are regular guests here, and we're always glad to have you. We've got, we'd planned to devote this show to talking about the best and the worst in the year's movies, but obviously we got some incredibly sad news yesterday with the death, the apparent suicide of actor and comedian Robin Williams, and I think probably we've got to talk a bit about his life, his legacy. Where to start, Ed?
Yeah, I just... And depression. I mean, you know, just at any forum possible, I think we need to mention that if you observe anyone showing signs of depression or any other mental illness, intervene, especially now when we have Facebook and places where you can go to other friends and organize. You know, we need to get involved.
Yeah.
You know, this is just another reminder.
Why do you think this has hit people as hard as it has? Why is you know, we were talking morning news programs pretty much devoted their entire 2 hours to this.
Say what you will about the celebrity culture that America is obsessed with, but I think when something like this happens, if it brings more awareness to it under such dire circumstances, then and this is somebody that some of us have literally grown up watching.
Mm-hmm. So, and he's one of ours.
Yeah. What do you mean by that, Ed?
Our age, our peers.
Yeah.
I would say that because I got to see Mork and Mindy in its original run in the 1970s, which was his first, you know, his first breakthrough. So if guys my age and older, I mean, we've a big chunk of our lives have been involved watching this guy in one way, shape, or form.
For the most part, you know, you have either the tragic, very young death of celebrities or you have older celebrities where it's roughly the time when people die.
Well, and I think he was 63 years old. Mm-hmm. And still successful, still working, you know, by most accounts. He was married, he had children. I mean, most of the things we see as, you know, signposts for a happy, contented life were in place for him.
But it was funny. You were saying off mic about the fine line between comedy and tragedy, and unfortunately, this is not the first case where we have and Williams. If you've listened to interviews, if you listen to one that was just on with Fresh Air, I mean, he's been very candid and frank about his past demons, whether it was addiction or the bouts with depression. But Richard Pryor went through the same thing as far as having a really rough upbringing and then his own addictions. Freddie Prinz Sr., who took his own life in his mid-20s. Chris Farley and John Belushi met
self-destructive behavior.
We have another comedian on there as far as the comedy tragedy mask being very close.
What made him so successful? I mean, Matthew said, Ed, you called him one of our own. Matthew said we grew up watching him.
Speed.
Yeah.
I mean, speed and agility. He, his joke, I mean, I'm not going to do anything negative here, but if you broke down the jokes, which if you broke down the jokes, a lot of the jokes were very ordinary. Not to put it down in any way, but it was the speed and the agility with which he laid them out, that he switched personas. Even if some of the things he was doing wasn't that striking, just watch him zip from one to another.
Yeah, if you go back to you can see a bunch of his stand up. You can see the evolution of his stand up on YouTube. Those early 70s, especially the album Reality, What a Concept. It's kind of a landmark comedy album because like Ed said, to be able to go from one voice to another, shifting gears so fast.
Well, one character sketch after another, pretty much.
And go off on a tangent and a tangent and a tangent and then get back to it. Which now part of it is he said he was doing a lot of cocaine at that time, but it was that kind of late 70s disco fueled energy. And we had never really seen that. Pryor had never done that. And
no.
Carlin wasn't like that. So I think it was taking counterculture humor and zipping it up a great deal. And then he was able to use some of that as far as improvisation, doing television, doing a lot of his films where he had room to improvise.
Well, and almost every, like they say, Aladdin, he improvised almost all of that.
I think he did the vocal tracks first and made the film
and then
around
they wrote
that's
the,
impressive.
The script backwards.
That's really impressive. I mean, the critics have done this in the past where we've complained about certain comics that the director doesn't direct. They just roll the camera and say, do something funny.
And lightning will strike.
Right, and that has happened with Williams in the past if you look at some of them. But to put an entire animated film around a vocal tracks that's pretty impressive. And at that stage in his career, to have that much pull, to take a chance on that, and it worked. It worked beautifully.
Well, we tend to forget. I mean, there was a time for the past 10 years or so, he's not really been the kind of guy who could open a film or make a guarantee box office success. He was a sort of a solid supporting performer.
I'm glad you brought this up because I wrote down these are the films that he did, and these aren't all of them, but these are the films he did between 1987 and 1993. Good Morning Vietnam, first nomination. Dead Poets Society, second nomination. Awakenings, Fisher King, third nomination. Hook, Aladdin, and Mrs. Doubtfire. That's not a bad streak at all.
Happened then?
Well, the other part of that, too, is that, John, I made my list of my favorite films of his, and only one of them is a comedy. And in that particular comedy, he was pretty much the straight man for the movie.
Which one?
Club Paradise.
Okay.
Wow.
So,
even a film. It's funny because he even admitted that he got a huge, huge check for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And didn't really put all of his into it.
No.
It was one of those jobs you couldn't say no.
But, beyond the comedy, you had a guy that could touch people remarkably well.
He had a core. Before we went on the air, I mentioned I met the guy once. I met Robin Williams once. I was on the board of a local not-for-profit that raised funds for spinal cord injury research. And Robin Williams was very close friends with Christopher Reeve, apparently. They went to Juilliard together. Mm-hmm. They were roommates for a while. I went out for a Christopher Reeve Foundation fundraiser to New York. And the thing he Williams was the show for the event. It was a high, obviously a high ticket event for heavyweights. It was my brush with greatness. I rode the escalator up with Aidan Quinn. It's probably more imprinted more heavily in my memory than his. But what I remembered about that the most was the speed. I mean, the agility of the characterizations, and the agile is the word I keep coming back to too. That is that nobody else was that nimble.
Could
move from character to character to voice, all of that sort of stuff, and sketch it that fast in what was really fairly, you know, a fairly few broad strokes. But what I remember about that evening the most was kind of the tenderheartedness to the guy, too, because he obviously was there just for a friend. Afterwards, when he was accepting kind of the congratulations from the crowd and mingling, he kept thanking people for being there, not just for spinal cord injury research, but for his friend, Chris. And I remember at one point seeing Williams and Reeve and Reeve's wife, Dana, and it's sad that all three of them are dead now, that they all passed before their time, sort of huddled together, and you could just tell from the body language, and they'd moved into what was that kind of intimate space, you know, that these were three people who really loved each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that, after the news had come that he had died, was the image I kept coming up to, was seeing the three of them together like that. And that, I think, can we talk a little bit, because I think, Ed, you are onto something too. There was a tenderness to the guy, even with all of the manic energy, and, you know, to some, everybody knew about the, you know, the high living, the fact that he was one of the last people John Belushi saw before, you know, he overdosed. So can you talk a little bit about how he conveyed that?
Well, I mean, Moscow on the Hudson. Mm-hmm. Just the tenderness, you know, the I believed him, you know, and the world according to Garp. Again, you know, he found characters, you know, especially in drama, he found individuals that were moving and that were relatable and were everything that his comic characters weren't, and it all worked.
Yeah, I think when he made the transition from television to film, I mean, his first starring role was Popeye. He was playing a cartoon character, basically. Mm-hmm. And the chances that he took, and not everybody went with it. World According to Garp is a really good film, but it is not what I think the mall crowd wanted. I think the same thing with Moscow on the Hudson. I really enjoyed Moscow on the Hudson. Mm-hmm. And there's if you get a chance to find it, I don't even know if it's in print anymore, but there was a film called Seize the Day where he was a salesman. And that was kind of the serious drama at that time for him, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't opening in 1,000 screens. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really until Good Morning Vietnam, which I still think is it's not the best, but I think it's my favorite, because there was room for him to improvise, obviously, in the scenes on the radio, and then this very touching scene of a man overseas, just, you know, witnessing war, trying to fall in love, trying to be a friend, and you had the best of both worlds, I think, in that production.
We are talking about movies and the film career of the late Robin Williams here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I mean, there's a tremendous range of roles there. And it's odd because he was not also what you would call your classic leading man either.
No. He found people, though. The Fisher King. Yeah. Look at the Fisher
Love
King.
Love the Fisher King.
He broke your heart. He reached for, you know, the stars. I mean, he was hilarious at times. He was heartbreaking at times. You bought it in that bizarre screenplay. He made it feel palpable.
Mm-hmm. And that's and playing a straight man in Awakenings or Dead Poets Society. It's funny. I think there were times where you wondered where the improv would come in. I remember a scene in Dead Poets where he's imitating if John Wayne did Shakespeare, or, mm-hmm. or Brando doing Shakespeare, which had already happened. But mm-hmm. but those little moments of the twinkle, the comedy that I think we wanted to see. But seeing him tackle a serious role, go stand toe to toe with somebody like Jeff Bridges or Robert De Niro,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really good stuff.
And a villainous role. I mean, one hour photo, which was really creepy.
1 hour photo, Insomnia and Death the Smoochie were back to back to back. And he said that wasn't intentional. It just kind of turned out that way. And I think that was much needed. In fact, those were probably the last of his performances that I really, really liked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at some point, we're about ready to head to a break. Mm-hmm. But I would like to talk a little bit about kind of what happened. And specifically, you know, whether Mrs. Doubtfire, which was a huge hit, took him down the wrong path. You are listening to No Limits. I'm John Kroll. My guests are Matt Soucy and Ed Johnson Ott. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about movies and really about, right now, the career of the late Robin Williams. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests, good friends, are Matthew Soucy, who is the host of Film Sociology here at WFYI, and the longtime movie man, movie critic for Nouveau, Ed Johnson Ott. I posed right before we went to the break whether Mrs. Doubtfire, that kind of spectacular success, took him kind of off the rails there for a while.
I'll answer it this way.
Yeah.
I was thinking about Williams. Last night I watched Good Morning Vietnam. This morning I watched Good Will Hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 44. And as I said, I saw
just a pop.
I said thank you in this group. Yeah. I saw Mork and Mindy in its original run.
Yeah.
So to spend the majority of my life watching his work, I think at a certain age like mine and ours, we got kind of spoiled
mm-hmm.
because we got to see Williams on as a stand-up, Williams with a hit TV show, Williams with hit movies. And it got to the point, I think, especially after Doubtfire, where for me personally, and I'm like I said, I'm speaking for myself, it got to the point where why would I want to pay to see a Robin Williams movie when I could see him do a 10-minute talk show segment turned into 30 minutes
mm-hmm.
and see him do 1 hour of stand-up on HBO for free?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the films.
So in effect, he was competing with himself.
Kind of, and it got to the, and if it was a certain film where he was only utilizing a portion of his comedic prowess, mm-hmm. you know, like I think of the film Father's Day he did with Billy Crystal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why make that when I could see them do comic relief once a year? And that was, I think, that was more entertaining than trying to shove them into a buddy picture. And it's funny, Ed, you were talking earlier about the certain elements that he would do in his stand-up, and I think that also came into fruition as well.
Well, I guess what I was wondering with that, though, is that it kind of did take, like Father's Day, all of that, it took him on this kind of family-friendly ride for a little while when, as you pointed out, some of the more interesting later works that he did were the edgier ones, where he kind of explored his dark side instead of trying to be, you know, everyone's father and mother at the same time.
Well, he went into a direction for a bit where he was trying to find roles where he could be riotously funny and tragic in the same film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking Patch Adams and Bicentennial Man in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And he got grilled by the critics.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, this is a guy who cared deeply about what people thought of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of a sudden, he's gone from manic golden boy to the critics saying, this man is so mawkish, I can't stand it. And that couldn't have been hard for him to hear.
Or easy for him to hear.
Yeah,
it had to
easy,
be hard.
Sorry.
It had to be. Well, and I think there is that kind of pinnacle of success. But I can't remember the critic said, you know, when you start saying yes to every part of the audience, mm-hmm. then ultimately you're not challenging them at all anymore. And part of, you know, what even something like Mrs. Doubtfire did, there was a subversive edge to that film as well, an undercurrent that I think a lot of people missed that he provided.
Mm-hmm.
I think of, I was going through the IMDb, and you mentioned after he won, I always remember Roger Ebert who used to say, when you got nominated, you were guaranteed one film. If you won, you were guaranteed three.
Mm-hmm.
So his follow-up to Good Will Hunting were What Dreams May Come, Patch Adams, Jacob the Liar, and Bicentennial Man.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a voice job on AI, Artificial Intelligence, and then the Dark Trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are other things I think of where I think of a film like RV. I remember being angry at RV because it was kind of just a dumb family comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It also made more money its opening weekend than United 93, which I deemed the best film of that year.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing Robin Williams do white dad rap act in a 2005 film,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's like Catskills.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was, you know, a resting on the laurels. I remember a film I think you and I were not crazy about called License to Wed,
mm-hmm.
with Mandy Moore, where he plays the priest who's counseling a young couple getting married, and he has such at times more psychotic behavior than Death to Smoochie.
Yeah.
We are talking about movies and about, right now, the career of the late Robin Williams. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, before we get to what has been the year other than this, and I hope we'll be somewhat happier, this is difficult for all of the reasons that we've listed. What do you think his legacy, and I'm not going to go with the human being piece of that, because I think we've said, Ed said it eloquently, if you've got a friend who is combating depression, you know, don't stand around and watch. Basically, figure out a way to get help there. As an entertainer, what is his legacy going to be? What, say, 20, 25 years from now, will we remember about Robin Williams, or will we remember him?
I think that stretch of films between 1987 and 1993, plus winning Best Supporting Actor for Good Will Hunting,
mm-hmm.
From a film standpoint, stand-up, he's always going to be around. That's always going to be something to study. Nobody's going to be able to come close to that manic, clear energy.
Mm-hmm.
The amazing part, if you think about it, is that, I mean, just judging from the way media is right now, there's a good chance that the stuff that won all of our hearts, the manic, crazy whirlwind comedy, with it being on an old TV show, we probably won't be as accessible as his darker or more dramatic films. I think he'll probably be remembered more as an actor who did, you know, dark stuff or serious films than as a comic in the long run.
Well, and I misspoke. If you had to pick one Robin, I'd like to leave it on this. One Robin Williams performance, the one that will endure, the greatest one. Which one would you pick?
I'd pick Good Morning Vietnam. Because I think for me had the right balance of him being able to let loose and him being able to follow a script,
mm-hmm.
and he did both of those really well, really really well. In it. Mm-hmm.
On Moscow and the Hudson, the totality of it, he took something that could have been. He made it work, and he made things seem bigger, and it just reminded me. He underlined our common humanity and did it really well.
We are talking about movies. We have been talking about the career of the late Robin Williams so far. We're going to switch now and talk about really what the year has been like in terms of movies before we got this sad kind of bombshell yesterday. You know, in terms of the good so far, Ed, who do you? What films do you think have been the best?
The Grand Budapest Hotel, mm-hmm. The Lego Movie, Guardians of the Galaxy, which I've seen three times. Three times. I had a ball every time, and I'm going to take my wonderful son, Donald, who's listening to hear me say his name on the radio.
Okay.
Hi, to Donald. See you soon. Hey, Donald.
If I mention Emma, I have to pay her.
Oh, she's already got an agent.
I know.
Guardians of the Galaxy, right. Grand Budapest, Lego Movie, Only Lovers Left Alive, a film that most people haven't seen called Lock.
That actually comes out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. So rent it. It's the best Tom Hardy performance since Bronson, which is what put
riveting.
Him on the map.
Yeah.
Great
movie.
One-man show.
Chef, I mean, Chef was a minor film, but a really nice minor film. The Fault in Our Stars, I think, was very affecting despite any flaws. 22 Jump Street was really funny. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Or as we have listed on Nuvo, Dawn on the Planet of the Apes.
Well, it's kind of like saying get on the plane. No, I want to get in the plane.
Real quick, Matt.
I'm with him on a lot of those. Guardians of the Galaxy, Boyhood, Richard Linklater's film, Life Itself, great documentary about Roger Ebert. Godzilla, I had fun because Godzilla was taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Dark, serious matter. Jodorowsky's Dune, which is now out on DVD and Blu-ray. Grand Budapest Hotel, you mentioned. Tim's Vermeer. Which I think is out on DVD and Blu-ray as well. It's been a really good summer and spring for big blockbuster movies and art house films. I've been really happy about it. Usually it's, you know, last summer was particularly weak. This summer is good for big blow-up stuff.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. We got a little bit of feedback.
Hi, it's Cheryl Baker. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Fine, Cheryl. How you doing?
Pretty good. Sad, but I also love The Fisher King. Probably one of my favorite movies. So many nuances to it. I was wondering what your thoughts were, you guys, on Richard Jenny, who was such a wonderful comedian, who committed suicide in 2007. And just knowing really good comics a lot do have, like, a dark past, or they deal with depression and... do you see any similarities to that? Do you think it's simple as what it appears to be?
Sure.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Cheryl. We'll see if you get an answer.
Richard Jenkins.
Richard Jenny.
Jenny.
Richard
yeah. Jenny. I liked him. He mm-hmm. had a little sitcom. I even liked the sitcom. Platypus Man, I believe. I think we all have something in common. You know, if you look at the darkness long enough, it's easy to get swallowed. I think that can happen to anybody. I think comedians have to examine to make any kind of solid points, and comedy's built on some solid points for a lot of comedians. If you're looking at the human condition, it can get rough. It mm-hmm. does get rough.
Yeah. Some use it for therapy. Some use it as a shield. You know, I remember Richard Pryor telling stories that he would do, or George Carlin as well. They tell jokes not to get beat up in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything to make yourself stand out. I remember Billy Crystal talked about he was not the class clown, he was the class comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm going to do a Billy Crystal bit where the class clown would strip down and run on the football field naked and grab the football, and the football comedian would tell that guy to do that.
Yeah. And then provide the commentary while he was
doing
it.
Right. So it reminds me of artists who are celebrated after their past, and then there are artists that say, forget that, I want to be celebrated now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And fortunately in Robin's case, you know, he's 63. So he was able to get some of the success of his labor.
Yeah, well, while we were talking, when Cheryl asked the question, I, for some reason, I can't place who the comedian was who said this. I asked why he started doing comedy. It sounds like it would be Woody Allen or someone like that, said that the reason he started doing comedy was because I couldn't afford therapy at the time.
That's a universal statement, I think,
yeah,
for a lot.
That was the motivation. Again, we are talking about movies here on No Limits. Jackie, welcome to the program. Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, you've talked a lot about getting help for people that you notice have mental health issues, and I just wanted to share a website. There's a mental health first aid course, and people can get that information by going to the website at www.mentalhealthfirstaid.org.
Well, thank you very much. That is very useful information. Thank you. Thanks much. Well, let's go back then and switch gears here and talk again about the year in movies so far. What we've talked about the good. What have been the most disappointing?
The list is always
longer when I talk with you.
I'm gonna give a little inside secret. As far as like for my show, if once a film opens, I more than likely am not going to be able to see it until it comes out on DVD mm-hmm. and Blu-ray, because I got to focus on what's opening the following week.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there are sometimes, especially if I'm working on a show. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a film critic who's also an artist who works from time to time. So there's no bitterness. I actually do both. Nothing mm-hmm. you can do about that. But if you know, I might see one film a week, and if I have a choice, like last week, did I want to see the Helen Mirren restaurant movie or Ninja Turtles? And I opted for the Helen Mirren restaurant movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of films that I didn't get a chance to see, and I'm not really losing any sleep over it. However, I did sit through Sex Tape with Jason Segel and Cameron Diaz.
Otherwise known as A Couple of Hours of Your Life You'll Never Get
you
Back.
You know, uh-huh. I'm kind of, and it's funny because this reminded me, I'm tired of 30 and 40-something people complaining about not being young and hip anymore.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, once we actually see the tape at the end of the film, not really a spoiler alert, it's sad. It's really sad of how much talk that they don't have as much physicality as they once did when they were dating. And then people who are technologically sound become really cinematically stupid for the point of the plot.
Yes.
It's really sad to watch.
Well, how about A Million Ways to Die in the West?
I missed that one.
Yeah, well, it was A Million Ways to Die on celluloid. I mean, it was just so sad. For every joke that hit, there were so many that didn't. And there was Seth MacFarlane in the middle of it. Hi, this is my vanity project, and I got the clout and the money to get it made.
And he did.
He did. Oh.
And a heck of a cast, unfortunately,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're Seth MacFarlane and you're starring in the show, you better brace yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So what other? Those are the two big ones, Sex Tape and...
I sat through Third Person. The Paul Haggis film, the gentleman who gave us Traffic and In the Valley of Ella, a review which I still steal from Ed and I give him credit for. In the Valley of Ella, Ed said it's like getting hit over the head with a cardboard tube. Mm-hmm. And this one you have
I'm pretty good.
You are very good, but it's a really good cast. Liam Neeson, Adrian Brody, and it's intertwining stories of really unpleasant people. And the big reveal is that we all have our own slings and arrows as far as bad behavior with Mila Kunis and mm-hmm. James Franco. It was just I've seen films with unpleasant people in it, but this one was just not fun to watch.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one that I've got that Maleficent. Now, it's not one of the worst of the year by any means, mm-hmm. but this is a film, a lazy film. This is a film where they went, we've got Angelina Jolie. She's perfect for what she's doing. We can just throw some stuff around her. We don't have to worry about dramatic tension. We don't have to worry about consistent behaving characters because we've got Angelina Jolie.
And she's a powerful presence on mm-hmm. camera and all of that sort of stuff.
And they've made $500 million because they were right. She's so amazing in that film, and the art direction's so good that the fact that there's virtually no plot and the supporting characters are really badly written, they got away with it. It's just, I'm happy for Angelina, but wow.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Matt Soucy, who's the host of Film Sociology here on WFYI, and Nuvo's movie man, Ed Johnson Ott. I am John Krull. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking movies here on No Limits. We've also been talking about the career of the late actor Robin Williams. My guests are Matt Soucy, who is the host of Film Sociology. Big show on this Friday, right?
Yeah, I have one of your guests. He's now going to be one of our guests. Matt Tully from the Indianapolis Star is going to come in. We are going to obviously talk about Robin Williams now, but this Saturday marks the anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley, and we are going to have a very intense breakdown of the 32 Elvis Presley films.
33.
That's 33. What you get here at Public Radio is Elvis Cinema Breakdowns.
Yeah, that's correct. Correct. And Ed Johnson Ott, who is Nouveau's movie critic. We've gotten a message, looks like via Twitter, from a listener named Philip, says, I haven't heard anyone mention The Birdcage. Why?
That was not an intentional slight.
No.
It's fine. It was fun. It's actually a pretty good remake of an already funny foreign film, La Cage aux Folles.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a good couple, because he and Nathan Lane bounced off each other very well. And not really a spoiler alert, because it's a 20-year-old film, but you get to see Gene Hackman in drag, which really should never happen.
I was going to say, that is something you don't see every day.
No, you don't. So there you go, Phil.
I guess with the Birdcage, I kind of mentally put that one on the shelf, because I didn't like the way Nathan Lane's character was kind of dismissed because he was, you know, the housewife.
Someone had to be the wife, someone had to be the husband.
Yeah, and so he just kind of kept being shooed away while the real business was taken care of, and that bugged me, and I guess I probably didn't think of it because of that.
There you go.
We are talking about movies and the career of the late Robin Williams here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Luann, welcome to the program.
Well, hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to commiserate just a little bit. Moscow on the Hudson is one of my husband and I's favorite movies.
Yeah.
I love Robin Williams in that movie. And it was a little, it feels like it was a little bit unknown movie. I'm not sure if I'm right about that, but it just felt like a smaller film role that he had that was just beautiful. And, you know, we're mourning the loss of him today, and just wanted to, you know, join in with you all.
I'm glad that you did. That.
Yes.
But also wanted to revel in Guardians of the Galaxy, which is just my favorite Marvel movie. I think it's going to be, and I was wondering if that going to be. I know they're going to have another one.
Yes.
And I know it also. Is in the along the same lines with the other Marvel films.
Oh, you mean tied in with all of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all going to be tied in together. And is it going to be? Are there going to be a series of Guardians of the Galaxy? That's kind of what I was wondering.
Yes. Yes, yeah. There. Unless the second one would bomb, there will most certainly be a series of them. Yeah, it broke all kinds of records, and it was just received wonderfully by critics and audiences alike. It's going to be around for a while.
Thanks.
It's a fun movie.
Thanks very much for the call, Luann.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for
Take
having
care.
Me.
Thanks. Yeah, it is interesting with I have yet to see Guardians of the Galaxy, even though both of my kids want to see it, so I suspect it's in my very, very near future.
Yes.
Here, but one of the things, they, as I understand it, that you don't run the risk of with a lot of the other superhero films or Marvel or even the DC ones is worrying about whether the cast will continue to look good in spandex, basically, after a certain number of years.
That's true.
That's not going to be a problem here.
We are talking movies here on No Limits. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dave.
Dave, welcome to the program.
Dave's not here.
Dave is not.
Man.
Dave, well, we will try Mike then. Mike, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. I was just wanting to make the comment that my favorite Robin Williams movie was Dead Poets Society. And kind of looking back on it, it sort of looks like some of it had a lot to do with his life. The non-acceptance of the professor and the way he acted and the lack of acceptance and him wanting acceptance from the boys. And then the young boy who committed suicide because he wasn't accepted as an actor by his father. anyway, I just thought that that sort of was kind of ironic, and that's all I have to say.
Thanks very much for the call, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Me and my best buddy, we've watched that on numerous occasions and sat down and just teared up. And
you wish every teacher was like Ron was, and that you wish you had that much devotion to a teacher of that magnitude.
Well, and it's been years since I've seen Dead Poets Society too, but there is a quality if they learn more about you than they do the material, though. There's a question about whether that is in fact teaching or not just
right. But it's interesting that a few years later in Good Will Hunting, they would both gain guidance from each other. They would both gain therapy from each other.
Mm-hmm.
That works really, really well.
We are talking movies here on No Limits. Sadiq, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Happy to be here.
What's on your mind?
All right. I was just going to say, I haven't heard you guys mention it yet, but what did you guys think of the movie World's Greatest Dad with Robin Williams in it? I think that was personally my favorite performance of his in the movie.
I don't think I've seen it.
That's the Bobcat Goldthwait directed one, correct?
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I miss it because I don't think it was here. I don't think it ever came to Indy. At least I might be wrong, but and it's one of those I just hadn't gotten around to it at the video store. So, Sadiq, congratulations! You stumped the film
stumped
critic
the panel,
regime.
Yeah.
So
stumped the panel.
We wish we could give you a prize, but we can't.
I don't recall even hearing the title, to be honest.
I
really
do.
Don't.
It's he. If I remember right, he's a father who's trying to help out with his son, a relationship with his son, and then the son dies, and he creates this kind of loving relationship with his son. Am I right on that, Sadiq?
Yeah, it's a little twisted. His son...
It's directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, therefore it is twisted.
It has to be twisted, by definition.
That's very true. Yeah, basically his son accidentally killed himself in a really embarrassing way. I don't think I can say over the radio.
Thank
and
you.
And then he fakes his suicide to make it look like an actual, like, real suicide. And then he ends up actually becoming famous over it, and he kind of exploits the fame. That he created over his son's suicide, which it's really dark and twisted.
Not sure if that's the film you're going to watch this week.
No,
he's made me want to see it now.
Oh yeah,
I'm just curious.
I've heard people talk about it and rave about it. It's just one that I haven't actually gotten to.
Well, thanks for.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say thanks very much for the film tip. I think we've given these guys something to watch this weekend.
Oh, I'm glad. It's a really good movie. I want people to see it. So
very good.
Thanks much, Sadiq. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, and that also seems to me, I know we're veering back to Robin Williams,
okay.
But that seems to be where the audience wants to go with this, too. And, you know, with an improv guy, you kind of got to honor where the audience wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
On this, there were, in several of his films, too, these kinds of meditations on, you know, how fame could warp you, too, or success could warp you. And it sounds like, I've not seen World's Greatest Dad either, but that's also, you know, a meditation on, he starts out to do something for a reason that might be a little, you know, very human, but is at least somewhat charitable, and then finds his purpose gets altered as something takes off. Was that a theme that you could see in some of his films?
I thought of a film that really kind of bummed me out, and it was because he teamed up with director Barry Levinson. Levinson had directed him in Good Morning Vietnam, and then worked with him in Toys, which I know gets really mixed response. But he did a film called Man of the Year back in 2006, and it was what happens if a late night news comic host were to run for president and win.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was such a great idea that they absolutely dropped the ball with by turning it into this kind of serious political trying to make the world a better place instead of, I guess, maybe if this had happened 20 or 30 years ago, it would have been a wacky president type story.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that would have been more interesting for me as opposed and realizing, I think it was the fact that his character wins. It's like almost like the candidate, like, now what?
Well, and it, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, but you talk about two very large and easy to hit targets: talk radio and politics.
I mean,
you know, even Ray Charles could hit those targets.
Well, then Fisher
being dead too.
Yeah. Fisher King. We had Jeff Bridges as a late night disc jockey that provoked people.
Yeah. We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Molly. It says, 6 degrees of separation with Robin Williams and Ian Ziering. And go.
I'm sorry.
You're stumping the panel here, Molly.
All right. Ian Ziering, Beverly Hills 90210.
Sure.
Robin Williams, also on TV. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. You did that.
Are we trained SEALs now? Is this we're doing cinema bits for you?
All right. Well, who was in Sharknado?
He was in John Hurd.
John Hurd was also in with Robin Williams in
something. I have my IMDb page. Let me.
Okay.
You know what? Give us 8 minutes. We'll see if we can figure that out.
Yeah. Well, and we were talking before we came back to Robin Williams, and I do want to get your views on.
Go ahead,
Matt.
Wasn't John Hurd in Awakenings?
He
was the foil. Yes, he was the Dr. Foyle in Awakenings.
Okay, so, all right, so Ian, so you've done John Hurd, Robin Williams.
You're welcome.
Three steps. Okay. So we've got just a little bit of time left. What are the films that are still coming up that the two of you are most looking forward to?
You know what? I have done my very best.
Not to go in with expectations?
Well, I it's been 18 years that I've been doing this with Nouveau. And to keep it fresh for myself, I do my very best to stay away from all advanced publicity of everything. I try to be as ignorant of the film as possible. There's a quote for you. Yeah. I try to be as ignorant as possible
when I go into that theater. You're welcome, world.
Okay. And they have the sound on that one, too.
Yeah, boy.
You got the tape to prove it. All right.
Well, I would say it's funny because I kind of back up Ed on that. It's very rare for us to sit down at a press screening or an advanced screening and know absolutely nothing about the picture.
Yeah.
And that's really rare. Now, that being said, there are two that I have written down that I'm intrigued with, only because of the actors and the directors involved. One is Interstellar, the Christopher Nolan film with Matthew McConaughey that's supposed to be about time travel, and then Girl Gone, which is the new film that will be directed by David Fincher with Ben Affleck about the missing wife that he may or may not have killed.
And now, if I'm correct, there's been Gone, 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 and Gone, Baby, Gone.
Yes.
That all also kind of dealt with the same
topic. And the Canadian hockey movie Goon, which has nothing to do with that except it starts with a G.
There you go.
So we're doing alliteration now.
Maybe. We were asked to do 3 degrees, but we're doing party tricks now.
I know. What are the films that you're dreading coming up? You think, oh, nothing good could come of this.
The next Transformers.
That's next year.
You feel like the concept has been exploited as fully as it can be had?
Yeah, that's it. They've exhausted their creative possibilities. That's what I was thinking.
Okay. I keep wondering how much of the Purple Rose Theater, you know, the theater that Jeff Daniels runs in Southern Michigan, I'm wondering how much of the money that he earns for Dumb and Dumberer is going to go into the theater.
I hope that's funny. I really hope
that's
funny. I do, too.
The fact that they got them both together, not really difficult in Mr. Carey's part, but because he's been needing a hit for quite a while.
Well, yeah.
Two that are coming up, I mean, not this year, but next year, are Superman versus Batman. I am dreading.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what to do with Superman. They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're going to have to do some real gymnastics with the story to make it an even fight between Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
You know.
I drop a building on the guy and we're done.
And I'm hearing noise that a Ghostbusters sequel may be in the works.
Well, Dan Aykroyd's been doing that since, 1990?
But I'm hearing it from other people. I hope it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Oh.
We are talking movies here on No Limits. Linda, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir.
What's on your mind?
Well, my mother was a stroke patient.
Oh.
And before she died, one of the things that I used to do to help keep her interested in something was to play movies. we'd get the VHS, you know, recordings of movies. And, of course, with a stroke patient, you always wonder how well they're really following the plot. And in some movies, you know, she would just, like, start, you know, flailing her hands. But she always loved Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what made me feel good is that she laughed at all the right places. She always laughed, you know, when he came to the line where he said, you know, I've only been a woman for one day and I'm already going through hot flashes. And she always laughed at that point. So, for her, that was a wonderful film. You know, and, you know, you think of it maybe as a kid's movie, but it wasn't. It was for all of us. And if I could quickly,
sure.
There was a comment earlier on about how to get help for someone
yes.
with depression or specifically manic depression.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a little personal experience with that, and word of caution is that the trajectory of that illness is really unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend's psychiatrist told me that even though that person might tell you the night before they commit suicide that they would never do that,
mm-hmm.
you just don't know.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to know.
Well, and I think the key here, and I think Ed's comments and even probably the website, you want to get professional help. I mean, this is mm-hmm. not something for amateurs to do themselves.
Exactly. And I learned that it's even difficult for the professionals.
Yeah. Well,
and The one thing we seem to have going for us now is that there are better medications.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for the call and for sharing your story, Linda.
Thank you.
Certainly.
And I would add to that while certainly we need to seek professional help for anyone with a diagnosed condition, we can also bathe them with love.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we can do that with each other. We should.
Yep.
And it is that, you know, there is a part of the whole thing with Robin Williams now, you know, and it is kind of the cliche, if you'd seen The Outpouring and knew just how much at some level he meant to people and to how many people
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
he meant something to, whether that would have altered the outcome or altered any of his decision-making going forward. So, Matt, and you know, it's a weird segue, but it's almost
right.
like your Friday show. I mean, another great talent, though, that, yeah, that again, you got to wonder what was going through the guy's head, too. Elvis.
Yeah, I mean, I think I consider him one of the great what could have beens,
yeah.
even though he's an entertainment icon. And we'll talk a little bit about that on Friday.
We've been talking movies here on No Limits. My guests have been Matt Soucy and Ed Johnson-Ott. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.